वञ्चकपटुः व्यस्तगिव सिन्धुवैव च पतितनं पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। The mind carries a living entity from one gross body to another. This is how just like now our minds carry us outside the room to the telephone. Maybe someone could ask him to speak a little more quietly. This was an answer to Pratini Bharishat's question about how the living entity, if the body dies and the body is the performer of the activities, so what causes the continuity and causes the soul to suffer and enjoy the activities that the body performs? And when after the body dies and the soul transmigrates to another gross body. So Narada Muni immediately answers that the soul is within the subtle body, and that is the real essence of our life. The subtle body becomes filled with desires. And as in this life, the desires and the thoughts that are within the subtle body, they dictate how we will act on the gross level with our gross bodies, with our physical body. So similarly, the thoughts and desires that fill our consciousness, our mind, our heart, our citta, at the time of death, determines the gross body that we get. And he explained also that we can tell by examining someone's activities in this life, we can tell what their mind is like. And by seeing what their mind is like in this life, we can understand what their desires were in previous lives, because how we think in this life is determined by the thoughts in previous life, thoughts and desires in previous lives. So in this way, transmigration goes on. Practically speaking, this is the fullest explanation of transmigration of the soul that we have seen up to this point in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita and also in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. It is described, but not as in the great detail that is described here. So we're continuing, beginning with text 70. What will Narada Muni explain now? As long as there exists the subtle material body composed of the intelligence, mind, sense objects, that means we enjoy the sense objects. That there are senses and sense objects that exist in subtle form in our mind. And based on that attraction on the subtle level, we enact it on the gross level. So there exists the subtle material body composed of the intelligence, mind, senses, sense objects. Note that the senses and sense objects exist in their subtle form in the mind. And we know that sometimes we can hear things in our mind, and sometimes crazy people, they fully hear so many things. They hear voices in their minds. We can see things in our mind. We can smell in our mind. And what else does it contain? The reactions of the material qualities. The consciousness of false identification. That's the false ego. This exists. This is what the subtle body consists of. And its relative objective, the gross body, exists as well. So as long as the material subtle body exists and the soul is encased in this, then the material gross body exists. So killing the gross body doesn't have any effect in the sense that the person still lives with all his misery if he kills himself within the subtle body, because that's where it all takes place. 71. When the living entity is in deep sleep, when he faints, when there is some great shock on account of severe loss, and at the time of death, or when the body temperature is very high, the movement of the life air is arrested. What does arrested mean?
Stopped.
Yes. At that time, the living entity loses knowledge of identifying the body with the self. So there is a complete, at times like that, deep sleep, fainting, great shock, one loses completely his consciousness of the gross body. So the gross body and the subtle body aren't eternally connected with the soul, with consciousness. So the above are all examples, at least how the subtle body disconnects from the gross body at different times. So the goal is, of any transcendental science, Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, is to break the eternally break, not temporarily like in these examples, to eternally break the connection between the subtle body and the gross body. That's also what shock is. When someone goes into shock, the subtle body is disconnecting from the gross body, and it's not working in a co-joint harmonious fashion. So what do they have to do? They have to bring the... And that's what's it due to? It's some one of these type of things, or some type of an accident. The body goes into shock, and the gross body, due to a trauma, the connection isn't working properly due to the life errors being stopped. So these are all temporary disconnections between the subtle body and the gross body. And what Bhakti Yoga does and Jnana Yoga does, Ashtanga Yoga, it completely, especially Bhakti Yoga, dissolves forever the subtle body, and what to speak of the gross body, the subtle body, so that the soul can exist free of these things. So pure devotional service is the means for this. When one is a youth, all the 10 senses and the mind are completely visible. However, in the mother's womb or in the boyhood state, the sense organs and the mind remain covered. The full manifestation of the senses aren't present in a child, but yet they exist, practically speaking, as seeds based on the subtle body. The full mind isn't revealed, and then when the child hits youth, and everything becomes manifest physically, because of the mental manifestations. It remains covered just as the full moon is covered by the darkness of the dark moon night. These are further examples how the things may exist in the mind, but until the mind manifests them, the gross body won't manifest them. When the living entity dreams, the sense objects are not actually present. However, because one has associated with the sense objects, they become manifest in the dream. So one is thinking, there's not a horse, you may be dreaming of being riding on a horse. But because of the gross association with a horse, at some point one can imagine it in the dream state. So there's this interplay between the subtle and the gross that's going on, but they are not exactly connected. Similarly, the living entity with undeveloped senses does not cease to exist materially, even though he may not be exactly in contact with the sense objects. So the living entity exists in the childhood, even though the senses aren't manifest. So the examples are showing that the living entity is not actually fully dependent. He's not actually dependent at all upon either the gross body or the subtle body. He is independent from it. He has his own existence. So if the conditioned soul is not his body, if he's independent from the body, what actually is he and what's going on? What are we seeing? What are we experiencing? Because we experience so many things when we examine our experience from the point of view of who we are. And we're experiencing now so many colors, so many feelings, so many thoughts, so many conceptions. We're experiencing them. So what is this? What is going on? What is the soul doing at this time? So the five sense objects, the five sense organs, the five knowledge acquiring senses, and the mind are the 16 material expansions. These combine with the living entity and are influenced by the three modes of material nature. So the living entity is there, and these are all there as well. And due to the influence of the modes of material nature and the false ego and illusion, Maya, the soul mixes with these things and experiences the material world, practically speaking, as ourselves, although we ourselves don't have anything to do with this. Thus the existence of the conditioned soul is understood. Prabhupada explains in his purport. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 15:17, Mama evang so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. Mana shashtanindriyani prakriti stani karshati. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. So we are not, we don't have anything to do with the material body whatsoever. We don't have anything to do with our eyes or what we see. With the eyes, the sense objects, or our hands, the working senses, or the mind even. But due to illusion and due to the modes of material nature that affect us, we are identifying with these things. And what is the result of this type of conditioning? It is that they are struggling. We are struggling very hard with the six senses, which includes the mind. This is life's struggle with the senses, and especially the mind. Struggling with it. Trying to force it into a situation that will satisfy us. But we are composed of something different. We are the soul. We are the consciousness within all this. Within the mind, within the senses, within the gross body, within the subtle body. We are the life, the consciousness, but seeing the world through these different filters and experiencing all these things as if they were us. Here it is also explained that the living entity comes in contact with the 16 material elements and is influenced by the three modes of material nature. So according to the modes that affect us, we are peaceful, or we are desiring all the time, or we are ignorant, delusioned all the time. And we go back and forth being pushed by these three in different combinations. And this is life. The struggle with all this is life. And the soul is just being carried around by this. The living entity and this combination of elements combine to form what is called the jiva bhuta, the conditioned soul that struggles hard within material nature. But actually, the unconditioned soul is completely different from all these 16 material elements in the three modes of material nature. By virtue, text 75, of the processes of the subtle body, the living entity develops and gives up gross bodies. This is known as the transmigration of the soul. Thus the soul becomes subjected to different types of so-called so-called enjoyment, lamentation, fear, happiness, and unhappiness. One after another. These are the whips of material life. When we are happy, we are forced to go forward in a particular direction. When we are lamenting, we are forced to act. The mind is full of lamentation. It has nothing to do with us. It comes and it goes. Fear, happiness, and all these things, one after another. And that's when if we go to the movies or watch television or something, you go to a movie and in 1.5 or 2 hours, you're forced, due to the identification with characters and specific characters that's set up very scientifically. For movies is set up scientifically, and novels, books, so that you there has to be an identification forged between you and the hero or the heroine. And then you vicariously experience what the hero or the heroine goes through. And therefore, in 2 hours you experience these heavy emotions. A lifetime's worth of emotions, all in 1.5 or 2 hours. And at the end, you've been through it, you feel like it, and if it's been an unhappy ending, you know, you feel really let down at the end. But at least you felt something. In material life, everyone is so dull that the experience of all these emotions is a relief from the drudgery and the dullness of nothingness that they experience all day long. Factory jobs and this and that. Just dullness, dullness, dullness. But it's really a torture for the soul to have to go through all these things. To have to go through the anxieties of people shooting at you and things like that. To lose all your money, to gain all the money, this, that. The love at first sight. The losing, then someone dies, and then someone this, and on, just having to experience all these things. It's a self-torture, practically speaking. It's having to go through, it's bad enough going through your own life, and you have to go through somebody else's life. So the soul becomes subjected to these different types of so-called enjoyments, and the soul has nothing to do with it. Purport. According to this explanation, one can clearly understand that originally the living entity was as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead in its pure spiritual existence. However, when the mind becomes polluted by desires for sense gratification in the material world, the living entity drops into the material conditions, as explained in this verse. That's probably where the term bloop comes from. That it's been around since the beginning, the very first days of ISKCON. Someone bloops into the material world. He drops into the material condition like a pebble being thrown into a very deep pond. Thus he begins his material existence, which means that he transmigrates from one body to another and becomes more and more entangled in material existence. And you see this, the people go to the movies and due to the identifications, everyone starts wearing their hair in a particular way, dressing in a particular way, like the people, the young lads wear those. You know that kind of hair? You know, that goes straight up like that with a short side. That was started by the Terminator. What's his name? You know, just so many years ago. And all due to that identification, as if that's going to make their muscles big or something like that. Just the identification, it gives them something. It's a type of insanity. And the so-called Matajis with their hair, just the unkempt, disheveled look, like they just woke up in the morning. That was actually started in the 60s by, I think it was Janis Joplin or somebody, some rock star. You know, it was this... Well, you started that. It was you. Yeah, it was the morning after look. But then everyone just wears it. It's an insanity. It's an illusion. So based on a desire to enjoy, because no one is enjoying, identification with someone who they think imagining is enjoying. So dropping into the material world in this way. And what's the result? Becomes more and more entangled in material existence. The process of Krishna consciousness is, in case you haven't figured it out by now, quite different. The process of Krishna consciousness, by which one always thinks of Krishna, instead of thinking of how I can enjoy, thinking of how Krishna can enjoy, is the transcendental process by which one can revert to his original spiritual existence. So that's why it's so hard to preach, because people are wandering around in the illusion, in this illusion trying to enjoy, and we say, no, give that up and think of Krishna, make Krishna enjoy. And suddenly the mind really reacts to that, other people's minds. Because the mind is so attached, its whole material existence is at stake, practically speaking. And you're telling it that you should die, your mind, you should die. Serve Krishna. You have no reason to exist anymore, so the mind fights back. Manmana bhava mad bhakto, this is devotional service, means always thinking of Krishna. Manmana bhava mad bhakto, madhyaji mam namaskaru, mam avyashyasi satyam te patijane priyosi me patijane priyosi. I promise you this. I'm telling you this truly, I promise you this, because you are so dear to me, Krishna tells Arjuna. Always think of me, Krishna says, and become my devotee. Worship me and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. One should always engage in the Lord's devotional service. As recommended in the Archana Marg, one should worship the deity in the temple and constantly offer obeisances to the spiritual master and the deity. These processes are recommended to one who actually wants to become free from material entanglement. Modern psychologists can study the actions of the mind, thinking, feeling, and willing, but they are unable to go deep into the matter. This is due to their lack of knowledge and to their not being associated with a liberated acharya. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, evam parampara praptam imam rajasya obadu sakalaneya mahata yoganashta parantapa. This supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in the course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. But guided by so-called psychologists and philosophers, people in the modern age do not know of the activities of the subtle body, and thus cannot understand what is meant by the transmigration of the soul. In these matters, we have to take the authorized statements of Bhagavad Gita, Dehinosmin yata dehe komanam jovanam jara tata dehantara praptiya diras tatranamuyate. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. Why is he not bewildered? Yeah, and therefore he's called self-realized. Because he knows what is his self and he knows what is not his self. How much pain we have to experience because we identify with not self. And the bigger, the greater our expansion of illusion is, of false self, the bigger our false ego is, the more we have to suffer. Because there is unlimited suffering in the material world. The more we think is ours, the more we suffer. The more we think is us, the more we suffer. On the other hand, if we are self-realized, understand that we are Krishna's servant, Evishvas Karle. To ar dukanai. There's no more misery because the soul is by nature blissful. And thus all human society understands this important verse, Dehunas Vinyatadehe. In Bhagavad Gita, cultivation will advance in ignorance, not in knowledge. Civilizations will advance in ignorance. An example of transmigration. So all this was explaining this, the subtle body, and therefore to understand transmigration of the soul, one has to understand the subtle body. And then when one understands the subtle body, one can understand transmigration. And here's an example. This is also given by Vasudeva. The same example is given by Vasudeva when he's preaching to Kamsa, when Kamsa is trying to kill Devaki, just after the marriage of Devaki and Vasudeva. The caterpillar transports itself from one leaf to another by capturing one leaf before it giving up the other. You ever see a caterpillar or a worm? A caterpillar type of worm, when he transfers, he's on the leaf going to one. First he's half on one leaf, and then when he's half on the other, he withdraws the back half of his body onto the one he's climbing to. So similarly, the subtle body goes somewhere while still in the gross body, and when he's firmly fixed in the concept of what he's going to be, practically speaking, by desire, then he'll give up the gross body he's in now. The caterpillar transports itself from one leaf to another by capturing one leaf before giving up the other. Similarly, according to his previous work, the living entity must capture another body before giving up the one he has. This is because the mind is the reservoir of all kinds of desires. Purport. A living entity too much absorbed in material activity becomes very much attracted to the material body. Even at the point of death, he thinks of his present body and his relatives connected to it. Thus he remains fully absorbed in the bodily conception of life, so much so that even at the point of death, he abhors leaving his present body. Sometimes it is found that a person on the verge of death remains in a coma for many days before giving up the body. This is common among so-called leaders and politicians who think that without their presence, the entire country and all society will be in chaos. How can I leave? How can I die? What will they do without me? How will the world go along without me? This is called Maya. Political leaders do not like to leave their political posts, and they either have to be shot by an enemy or obliged to leave by the arrival of death. By superior arrangement, the living entity is offered another body, but because of his attraction to the present body, he does not like to transfer himself to another body. Thus he is forced to accept another body by the law of nature. And again, his next body is based upon his mind. And Prabhupada explains towards the end of the purport. The root cause of one's association is the mind. This great Krishna consciousness movement is the greatest boon to human society because it is teaching everyone to think always of Krishna by executing devotional service. In this way, at the end of life, one may be transferred to the association of Krishna. This is technically called Nityalila Pravishta, entering into the planet Goloka Vrindavan. Pravishta means entering in. Nityalila means the eternal pastimes of Krishna. Entering into the eternal pastimes of Krishna. Bhagavad Gita 18:55 explains, Bhaktimam abhijananti yavanyas tasmi tatvata tatomam tatvato gyatva visite taranantaram. One can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead as He is only by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of the Supreme Lord by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. So that is our goal, to be fully conscious of Krishna by devotion. After the mind is completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness, one can enter the planet known as Goloka Vrindavan. To enter the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one has to understand Krishna. The process of understanding Krishna is devotional service. After understanding Krishna as He is, one can become eligible to enter Krishna Loka and associate with Him. The mind is the cause of such an exalted position. The mind can also get one a body like those of dogs and hogs. To absorb the mind always in Krishna consciousness is therefore the greatest perfection of human life. So nice. Text 78. As long as we desire to enjoy sense gratification, so this is such heavy preaching by Narada Muni to the king, who was thinking that I will get so much piety and enjoy on heavenly planets. Saying no sense gratification. Life is meant for something other than this. As long as we desire to enjoy sense gratification, we create material activities. When the living entity acts in the material field, he enjoys the senses. And while he enjoys the senses, he creates another series of material activities. In this way, the living entity becomes entrapped as a conditioned soul. So here's reaching the conclusion of Narada's teachings. Text 79. You should always know that this cosmic manifestation is created, maintained, and annihilated by the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the all-powerful controller, Lord of this world, he tells Pachini Bharishad. Consequently, everything within this cosmic manifestation is under the control of the Lord. To be enlightened to this perfect knowledge, to know who you are in relationship with this Lord, one should always engage himself in the devotional service of the Lord. Read the last paragraph of this purport. When we engage ourselves in the devotional service of the Lord to become Krishna conscious, we understand not only Krishna, but everything related to Krishna. In other words, through Krishna consciousness, we can understand not only Krishna and the cosmic manifestation, but also our constitutional position. In Krishna consciousness, we can understand that the entire material creation is created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, maintained by Him, annihilated by Him, and absorbed in Him. We are also part and parcel of the Lord. Everything is under the control of the Lord. And therefore, our only duty is to surrender unto the Supreme and engage in His transcendental loving service. The great sage Maitreya continued. He's explaining. Who is Maitreya speaking to? All right, let's see that again. Pull it out. In case you have a good idea, right? The light goes on. Okay. Always carry a light bulb in front of words to the wise. Just in case. The great sage Maitreya continued. Who is Maitreya speaking to? Vidura, yes. The supreme devotee, the great saint Narada, thus explained to King Prachini Bharishat, the constitutional position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entity. After giving an invitation to the king, Narada Muni left to return to Siddhaloka. Prabhupada explains in the purport, he invited the king to come sometime if you come to Siddhaloka. In the presence So what did the king do after hearing these very strong and straight instructions of Narada Muni? What did he do? In the presence of his ministers, the saintly king Prachinibarhi left orders for his son to protect the citizens. He then left home and went off to undergo austerities in a holy place known as Kapilashram. Prabhupada explains in the purport that he did not even wait for the sons to return. He just left a message with the ministers, make sure they do their duty to protect their citizens, and then he left himself to perform some austerities. There were many things to be done upon the return of his sons, Prabhupada explains, but he simply left them a message. He knew what his prime duty was. He simply left instructions for his sons and went off for the purpose of spiritual advancement. This is the system of Vedic civilization. Having undergone austerities and penances at Kapilashram, King Prachinibarhi attained full liberation from all material designations. He constantly engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord and attained a spiritual position qualitatively equal to that of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It means he attained life on the spiritual platform, free from all the modes of material nature, the Brahma-Bhuta platform. Text 83. My dear Vidura, one who hears this narration concerning the understanding of the living entity's spiritual existence, as described by the great sage Narada, or who relates it to others, will be liberated from the bodily conception of life. Such, so powerful are these instructions. Prabhupada's purport. The material creation is the spirit soul's dream. Actually, all existence in the material world is a dream of Mahavishnu, as the Brahma Samhita describes. Yakaranarana vajalei vajatisma yoga nidram ananta jagaranda saroma kupa. This material world is created by the dreaming of Mahavishnu. The real factual platform is the spiritual world. But when the spirit soul wants to imitate the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is put into this dreamland of material creation. After being in contact with the material modes of nature, the living entity develops the subtle and gross bodies. When the living entity is fortunate enough to associate with Sri Narada Muni or his servants, he is liberated from this dreamland of material creation and the bodily conception of life. 84. This narration, spoken by the great sage Narada, is full of the transcendental fame of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, this narration, when described, certainly sanctifies this material world. It purifies the heart of the living entity and helps him attain his spiritual identity. One who relates this transcendental narration will be liberated from all material bondage and will no longer have to wander within this material world. As indicated in verse 79, Srila Prabhupada says, Narada Muni advised King Prachinibarhi to take to devotional service rather than waste time performing ritualistic ceremonies and fruitive activities. The vivid description of the subtle and gross bodies in this chapter are most scientific. And because they are given by the great sage Narada, they are authoritative. Because these narrations are full of the glories of the glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they constitute the most effective process for the purification of the mind. As Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu confirmed, Cheto Darpana Marjanam, the more we talk of Krishna, think of Krishna, and preach for Krishna, the more we become purified. This means we no longer have to accept the hallucinatory, gross and subtle body, but instead attain our spiritual identity. One who tries to understand this instructive spiritual knowledge is delivered from this ocean of nescience. Text 85. The allegory of King Paranjana described herein according to authority, was heard by me from my spiritual master. Who's speaking? Huh? No? He's listening. Maitreya. And it is full of spiritual knowledge. If one can understand the purpose of this allegory, he will certainly be relieved from the bodily conception and will clearly understand life after death. Although one may not understand what transmigration of the soul actually is, one can fully understand it by studying this narration. Prabhupada's purport is the last in this chapter, and then there's some extra verses. The word striya, meaning alone with the wife, is significant. The male and female living together constitute the sum and substance of material existence. The attraction between male and female in this material world is very strong. In all species of life, the attraction between male and female is the basic principle of existence, because both are in the mood of enjoyer. And that's the essence of material life. The same principle of intermingling is also in human society, but is in a regulative form. Material existence means living together as male and female and being attracted by one another. However, when one fully understands spiritual life, his attraction for the opposite sex is completely vanquished. By such attraction, one becomes overly attached to this material world. It is a hard knot within the heart. Pumsa striya matuni bhava metan tayor mito vridyagrantamahu atog vihachetra sutaptivataya janasyamaham aham ameti. Everyone comes to this material world attracted to sense gratification. And the hard knot of sense gratification is the attraction between male and female. By this attraction, one becomes overly attached to the material world in terms of grihachetra, sutta, apta, vitta, that is, home, land, children, friends, money, and so forth. Thus, one becomes entangled in the bodily conception of I and mine. However, if one understands the story of King Paranjan and understands how, by sexual attraction, Paranjan became a female in his next life, one will also understand the process of transmigration. So, if people who are unqualified try not to become involved in association with male-female like that, they get into more trouble. And if people don't accept the regulative association of male and female, and they're not qualified, and then they get into trouble in that way. So, if one can't remain aloof from the association of the opposite sex, and in this society, the training is not towards aloofness, but it's just the opposite. Then one gets married and associates in a regulative way, and gradually, by the purificatory process of Krishna consciousness, one becomes free from material attachment in that way. Because one, by developing his attraction to Krishna, will get free of the enjoying spirit, which is the root of the problem. The root of the problem is the enjoying spirit. And the only way to remove that from the heart is through servant spirit, which is called devotional service, developing that. So devotional service, as Prabhupada once wrote me, is so powerful that even if we're householders, even if we're whatever we are, whatever situation we're in, we can make great advancement in spiritual life. Okay, so we end chapter 29, and that is the completion of the story of Paranjana. And we'll only hear about Puccini Bahishad again very slightly in relationship to his sons, the Prachetas, because we're going to rejoin them. They had performed austerities for many, for thousands of years in the water, 10,000 years, after having met Lord Shiva, after having been sent to perform austerities. They met Lord Shiva, performed austerities, then Narada Muni came and preached to their father, Puccini Bahishad, and we've been following that. And now in text 30, we'll rejoin the Prachetas, and the canto will end with chapter 31. So that will probably be another approximately 2 weeks of classes on canto 4, and then if Krishna allows, we'll begin canto 5. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Can you explain text 1b to the text 1 and 2?
I can read them. They're quite, if I remember correctly, they're quite simple. Did you have a particular question about them?
Well, how come they're there, and how come somebody says they belong in the text and some?
You mean the content of them, or why they're there?
It sounds like they're kind of optional inclusions or something. Are they Bhagavatam verses, or aren't they, or?
They're, according to Vijayadwaj Tirtha, they are.
Okay.
They're nice, and the purports are nice too. Because over time, sometimes something gets left out, maybe in the copying even, or some great sage will add something, and some people think that shouldn't be added, and some people think this was part of the original. So it becomes, these kind of things become contentious. But here, Prabhupada is saying that they're legitimate and bona fide, but he's not including them as the in the actual verses themselves. But any other, we could read them, but there's not very much time. They're quite nice. Any other questions or comments? No. Why don't we read there's two of them. We'll read them if there's another minute or two and there's questions. Yeah.
You talked about the body being like a caterpillar. Does it go from one body to
the subtle, the living entity entrapped within the subtle body transmigrates in a way that's similar to the way that a caterpillar goes from one leaf to another. In that, the subtle body first attaches itself by having desires to a form, another form, before it actually will transmigrate. In the same way that a caterpillar will move from one leaf, half move to the leaf, so the half that moves first is the subtle body. It becomes attached to a particular, by its desires, it becomes attached to a particular form. And it moves half there through the subtle body. And then when it's secure on one leaf, then it pulls the back part of its body along. So you've never seen that, have you? You have seen that.
But,
it's just like that.
Where does Yamaraj come into it? This,
and the super soul.
Yeah.
Well, Yamaraj comes in between, maybe. The suffering that goes on souls. But it's his desires will determine his next body. So your question was actually about Yamaraj. So in between the actual getting of the body, the soul has to experience so many things. If he's called to the court of Yamaraj. After all, it's only example, an analogy, to explain one aspect of the transference. Any other questions or comments? So we'll read these, quickly read them. Why don't you read the first one? 1A. Yeah, go ahead. I read all the time. Why don't you read 1A? 1A. Isn't it 1A?
Yeah.
1A, 2A. Good, read. Loudly. Okay? Read. R-E-A-D. Read. Read the verse. Instead of me reading it, you read it.
So which verse did you want? 1A.
Oh, the one after. 1A. It's the one after. Special note.
According to Vijayada Bhattita, who belongs to the Madhavacharya Sampradaya.
But really loudly.
The first two of the following verses appear after verse 45 of this chapter, and the remaining two verses appear after verse 79. Shall we read out there?
Yep.
No,
just read the translation and the purport.
The desire to maintain body, wife and children is also observed in animal society. The animals have full intelligence to manage such affairs. If a human being is simply advanced in this respect, what is the difference between him and an animal? One should be very careful to understand that this human life is attained after many, many births in the evolutionary process. The learned man who gives up the bodily conception of life, both gross and subtle, will by the enlightenment of spiritual knowledge, become a prominent individual spirit soul, as the Supreme Lord is also.
Purport.
It is said that a man is a rational animal, but from this verse, we can also understand that rationality exists even in animal life. Unless there is rationality, how can an animal maintain its body by working so hard? That the animals are not rational is untrue. Their rationality, however, is not very advanced. In any case, we cannot deny them rationality.
They have intelligence, in other words. You can see the dog or the cat will sneak in. That cat when Vrindavan used to open the door and sneak in and drink the milk.
Climb up on the table and drink the milk off this pot on the stove.
Yeah.
The point is that one should use one's reason to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for that is the perfection of human life.
So, turn you on, you read 1B.
If a living entity is developed in Krishna consciousness and is merciful to others, and if his spiritual knowledge of self-realization is perfect, he will immediately attain liberation from the bondage of material existence. In this verse, the words daya jiveshu, meaning mercy to other living entities, indicates that a living entity must be merciful to other living entities if he wishes to make progress in self-realization. This means he must preach this knowledge after perfecting himself and understanding his own position as an eternal servant of Krishna. Preaching this is showing real mercy to living entities. Other types of humanitarian work may be temporarily beneficial for the body, but because a living entity is spirit soul, ultimately one can show him real mercy only by revealing knowledge of his spiritual existence. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Jivera Swarup Hai Krishnera Nityadhas. Every living entity is constitutionally a servant of Krishna. One should know this fact perfectly and should preach it to the mass of people. If one realizes that he is an eternal servant of Krishna but does not preach it, his realization is imperfect. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur therefore sings, Dustamana Tumi Kishera Vaishnava Pratisthara Tare Nirjanera Ghare Tava Hari Nama Kevala Kaitava. My dear mind, what kind of Vaishnava are you? Simply for false prestige and a material reputation, you are chanting the Hare Krishna mantra in a solitary place. In this way, people who do not preach are criticized. There are many Vaishnavas in Vrindavan who do not like preaching. They chiefly try to imitate Haridas Thakur. The actual result of their so-called chanting in a secluded place, however, is that they sleep and think of women and money. Similarly, one who simply engages in temple worship does not see to the interests of the mass of people, or cannot recognize devotees, is called a Kanista Adhikari.
Very heavy. And then 2b, who will read that?
Everything happening within
time. Loudly.
Everything happening within time, which consists of past, present, and future, is merely a dream. That is the secret understanding in all the Vedic literature. Actually, all of material existence is only a dream. Thus, there is no question of past, present, or future. Persons who are addicted to Kanda Kanda Vichara, which means working for future happiness through fruitive activities, are also dreaming. Similarly, past happiness and present happiness are merely dreams. The actual reality is Krishna and service to Krishna, which can save us from the clutches of Maya. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, 14, verse, Mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. Those who surrender unto me can easily cross beyond my illusory energy. This is the end of Bhakti on the 12th of the 4th canto, 29th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Talks between Narada and King Krishna.
Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Narada Muni ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai.